This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
All right, everybody. Sorry, we are back. Sorry about that. We had a bit of a technical issue. We were about to come on the air, and then all of a sudden, we weren't able to go on the air. But now I'm here, Sal Capaccio, with you on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Welcome in today. Glad to be with you here on this Tuesday. Got a good show lined up for you today, and that includes, in an hour from now, going to hear from Buffalo Bills, former Buffalo Bills safety, Micah Hyde. Micah's going to bring his charity softball game to Buffalo, once again, to downtown Buffalo, at Salem Field, downtown, home of the Buffalo Bisons. And I know that they're close to a sellout. There's still some tickets left, but we're going to talk about that. But, of course, his time in Buffalo and his career in the NFL. He has officially retired, and we'll talk about that. So, Micah Hyde joining me at 10 o'clock. At 11 o'clock. At 10:30 today, got a interesting guest, Ben Ostro of Football Zebras. If you follow Football Zebras online, it's a great site for rules and analysts and analysis and things like that. And not only is it a great site for that, but it's also a good time for us to kind of digest what's going to be happening about a week from now. Next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, essentially, in West Palm Beach, the NFL owners meetings are going on. And that is when the NFL will... Competition committee will vote on rules proposals, or at least the owners, I should say, will vote on the competition committee rules proposals, what some of the teams put forward. All that's happening next week. When last week we learned that there were all these different proposals, like the Lions saying, hey, the defensive holding and illegal contact should no longer be an automatic first down, things like that. In fact, the Lions also proposed having a wild card team with a better record than a division winner seated higher. When all that went down, and we saw all of that last week, there was nothing about the dynamic kickoff. You know, so like what I mean is we had heard a lot of rumblings about how the kickoff, which last year went from the 25 to the 30-yard line for touchbacks in order to increase kickoff returns. And it did work, by the way. They did increase kickoff returns. We heard that the NFL is going to look at that again and go from the 30 to 35-yard line. So, we didn't see anything with the rules proposals when they came out. However, according to Jonathan Jones of CBS Sports, he reported a couple days ago, it is actually going to be on the docket, at least for a discussion from the competition committee as far as examining the kickoff and if they should move it to the 35. So what this tells me is this is going to happen. And I tell you, there's some breadcrumbs here. I told you when I went to the combine, I was shocked when I didn't see it on the rules proposals, because when I went to the combine last month, this was a big talk. I was told by several people this is very much in play, that this could very well happen, moving the touchback from the 30 to the 35-yard line. Then I didn't see it out there. And the rules proposals, I was stunned. Not only that, but even since the combine till now, teams are signing kickoff return specialists, which we didn't really see in the NFL for a while, but now we're seeing it, including the Bills. The Bills signed Laviska Shenault. Laviska Shenault's going to be a kickoff return specialist. That's really what he's going to be. And Brandon Bean basically said that. When he was signed, I said, I think this is about the kickoff return, even though we haven't seen anything official on it. I think that's why they signed him. And I know a lot of people thought, well, maybe it's because of James Cook and his situation. So Ty Johnson has to be playing running back, and then you want to fill in for Ty. I think he's going way down the rabbit hole. This, to me, the Laviska Shenault signing, just like Devin Duvernay wound up signing. Where'd he go? Maybe San Francisco? So he went somewhere. I think it might have been San Francisco. I have to look at that. But he was also signed recently. Teams are signing kickoff return specialists. I think teams know this is happening, including the Bills. So I think that we're going to see a move from the 30 to 35-yard line when it comes to the dynamic, as they say, kickoff return and the touchback. And Jonathan Jones actually has a really good article on it, and I want to touch on that. Ben Ostro is going to join me at 10:30 a.m. All right. Josh, I know you had to step out for a second. Are you there with me? Are you there? I want to tell you something. I got to tell you something great here because we've been... Okay. Are you right here? Are you there? All right. Okay, here we go. We did it. You ready? We did it. I'm going to say we did it. We did nothing except bring the information to the masses. As of 10:09 a.m., which is right now, there are 1,000 names in the transfer portal. Exactly 1,000.
Wow. We did it.
We did it.
There it is.
We really didn't do anything except bring the information. So I went and looked. Last year, through the entire college basketball, through the entire portal season, if you want to call it, 2,080 names. We are now at 1,000. The portal officially just opened yesterday. Now, there were names in there before it, so I don't know how it officially opened yesterday and there were names in it. But as of, hold on. Oh, I'm sorry. I just tweeted this out. As of 10:09 a.m. Sorry. I didn't even put the time. As of 10:09 a.m. today, the Division I basketball transfer portal hit 1,000 players. Last year, there were a total of 2,080 players. There you go. This is all, by the way, data from Verbal Commits is where I get this. 803-0550. Here's what I'd like to do today. I'm thinking about the rules. Thinking about NFL rules changes. What's going to happen next week? I'll be at the owners' meetings in West Palm. I'll bring you the information while we're there. Thinking about rules changes. What rule would you like to see changed in the NFL? It could be something that maybe they changed once you'd like to go back to. Maybe it's something that you would like to see go forward. Something that could be proposed. Something that is proposed. Whatever it is. I tweeted this out at Sal Sports. Okay. Bill. Good job, Bill. I like this. A lot of people have this one and have said this. He said, I would say a fumble through the end zone does not lead to a turnover. The team keeps the ball at the 20-yard line. Is that a good rule? There have been proposals about this, but the league has never changed it. And I understand when anybody says it's way too punitive if you fumble it through the end zone. So right now, the way it works is if you're running with the football and you're at the 5, the 4, the 3, the 2, the 1-yard line, whatever it is, and you fumble the ball into the end zone and then it goes out of bounds through the end zone, like the back or the side, whatever, that you lose the ball. The other team gets it. It counts like a punt touchback. That's exactly, it's not a kickoff touchback, a punt touchback because it goes to the 20-yard line. Yeah, I could see that. Matt says, make judgment calls reviewable by the eye in the sky. 10 seconds max to review it. I am not for this, Matt, and I'll tell you why. Everything is a judgment call. A holding is a judgment call. He says, why are there limits on referee challenges? If a ref gets 3 calls wrong or 4 more. I understand that. I think the reason why, Matt, and I'm with you, like you shouldn't be penalized. And last year they changed this. If you win your challenge, you get one. You still keep, like I think you can do 2 now and still get them back. It's changed the rules over the years. But the reason why you can't just have, you know, unmitigated, basically, reviews on judgment calls is because every play there'd be judgment call, a holding. Well, why wasn't that holding? Well, you called holding. Can we review that? I think that's why they do that. 803-0550 if you want to jump on board, at Sal Sports also if you want to tweet at me. What one rule would you like to see changed in the NFL? We have the rules proposals next week at the NFL owners meetings, also called the official name is the annual league meetings. Also, Josh, you know how we've been talking about the local connections to college basketball over the last couple weeks, you know, in March Madness and all
that?
Yeah, right?
I saw there was another connection out there now, right?
Yeah, there is. Congratulations to Brian Hodgson. Now, Brian Hodgson is a Jamestown native, Olean native. He's from Jamestown, Olean. I think he went to Jamestown High School. I have to make sure on that. But he's from that area. And he became an assistant coach at UB under Nate Oates. After that, after Nate left for Alabama, he went with him to Alabama. Then he became the Arkansas State head coach. They had a fantastic year in just 2 years. They did some great things over at Arkansas State. He has now been named Brian Hodgson, local guy from down in Jamestown. He is now the new head coach at the University of South Florida, the Bulls. How about that? And what's really interesting is yesterday, Josh, there was a lot of buzz about he was going to become the new UNLV coach. And it was like, oh, Brian Hodgson's going to go to UNLV. Then suddenly out of nowhere, bam, it's USF. So obviously his agent was gauging both, however that went down. But we have another local connection to big-time college basketball. Brian Hodgson has been hired by the University of South Florida, USF, to be their new men's head basketball coach. So check it out. You can follow Brian on Twitter, by the way, at Coach B. Hodgson. He's already changed his profile. Just named last night head men's basketball coach at the University of South Florida. Hashtag horns up. All right, so good for Brian Hodgson right there. Michael, let's see. No, this is not. How about this? Irkiel says, I would like to see defensive pass interference not be a spot foul. I'd like to see it a 15-yard penalty and automatic first down. Yeah, I mean, I understand that. It's the college rule, right? We've seen this before. For a lot of, you know, a lot of people have suggested this. We've seen this before, and college does it. If you throw the ball downfield, there's a pass interference. It's a 15-yard penalty. Automatic first down. It's not a spot foul way down the field. Gord, they should stop trying to make kickoffs relevant. I think he said irrelevant. I think he means relevant. Much like moving the extra point back. Has that really made the extra point more interesting? Yes. Yes, I think it has. I absolutely think it's made the extra point more interesting. That's a good question. Yes. What do you think, Josh? Moving the extra point back to where they've moved it, do you think it's made the extra point more interesting?
I think so, yeah, because I feel like you've seen like an increased number of extra points missed, but I also wonder, you know, would those still have happened even if you had it in the same spot that you did before? Because a lot of those, it was, you know, wide left or wide right. Like I feel like, and when they were wide left or wide right, they were very wide left or wide right. So it's not like, you know, if you would have been closer, they would have like squeaked in or anything like that. So
is this where we have to have a geometry lesson and say that, yeah, that's because they're farther away, so by the time it gets there, it's going to be wider?
Right. That is true. That might be skewing my mindset there. But my point more so is I think that I do wonder if it has changed as much as we think it has, because maybe it's more so the mental aspect of these kickers now. Like, oh, I got to hit it a little bit harder, so that might accidentally push it wide right or wide left. So there is probably a mental aspect that plays into it rather than, you know, like the physical aspect of the game itself. But I think it's okay. I don't know if you really need to change it much more, though, because I don't really know what else you can do to it that would make it more difficult. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm trying to see. I want to see if I have the data on... There's clearly more extra points missed, right? There's clearly more, but I want to see the data on it. And I can go back and look at that. You know, I could take a look. I wasn't prepared for it, but I definitely would like to do it now that you've mentioned it, because I'm thinking, okay, what is the actual data on, you know, extra points that have been missed? And I guarantee you there's been more, you know, over the last, since they made that rule change. Yes, I think it is more interesting. Like, when you score a touchdown in a close game, I mean, if you got to kick the extra point, look at the Houston-Kansas City game last year in the playoffs. And that was a big deal when he missed an extra point, right? We've had him here. Tyler Bass struggled, missed a couple extra points. I don't think they've necessarily cost the Bills games. I have to go back and think, but with teams, it has happened to teams when you play close games. I think moving the extra point back has actually made extra points, A, more interesting, and B, gotten the intended effect of what they... Yeah, well, that's it. The intended effect is more interesting. You want to stick around and watch it. BG, I like this one. I never have really understood why teams have to make players on their active roster inactive for game day. I'll explain why they do that. Doesn't mean that you have to like it, but I'll give you the explanation. Because the NFL's thought is, the larger the roster on game day, the more it separates the haves and have-nots, the less parity there is. Because the theory is from the NFL... There's financial implications too, but mainly the theory is from the NFL, the bottom end guys on really good teams are going to be way better than the bottom end guys on bad teams. So if everybody dresses, it's just more, you know, of a gap, less parity. And they want close games as much as possible. They don't want to do that. But that's a lot of the reasoning why, whether you want to, you know, like that or not, that's what it is. So the kickoff stuff has always been really interesting. Oh, Kerry, I like this. 1 foot inbounds on a catch. More exciting plays and easier to officiate. I have always thought this should be maybe something in the NFL, Kerry. And the reason is, I agree. The NFL has always been about exciting catches, exciting plays, right? I mean, 1 foot inbounds. The issue I have with it is we have changed so much, and they have, to benefit the offense. Why continue benefiting the offense? The defense needs something. Defense needs something. All right, so here's what Jonathan Jones wrote at CBSSports.com this week about the NFL possibly moving the kickoff touchback from the 30 to the 35-yard line. He writes, after a 2023 season 2 years ago where there was a historically low return rate of kickoffs, the league wanted to resuscitate the play. So they obviously went to, okay, let's move it to the 30. That's a little more, you know, penal. If teams kick it into the end zone, there's a touchback. You're going to have to deal with a team starting at the 30, so you might not want to do that. Well, the average field position last season was the 29.6-yard line when including touchbacks. If you remove it, it was the 28.8. Doesn't sound like much. There's a 1 yard difference, right? The league had only 21.5% of kicks land in the landing zone. Placing the ball at the 35-yard line should cause coaches to think twice about booting the ball too deep. The league's internal data, according to this article, shows a 65 to 75% return rate if the touchback is moved to the 35, more than double last season. So essentially, what they're saying is, and hypothesizing based on what happened last year, that if you move the kickoff and move the touchback this year from the 30 to the 35, you're going to have even twice as many kickoff returns as you did last year. And I guess the answer to the question is that worth it for you as a fan? Obviously, you're not the ones voting, But for you as a fan, I've heard a lot of people say it's just stupid. Why do they keep doing this? Do you want to see that? Or would you rather just say, no, no, no. Who cares? Keep it at the 30. I don't care to see a kickoff return. And just let it be a play that kind of doesn't matter. It did matter a little more last year. I believe in the playoffs last year, though, the kickoff return rate was a bit down. Now, one alternative to be considered here is moving the kicker back 5 yards. However, as he writes, sources believe kickers these days are so good they could still reach the end zone with enough regularity backed up, you know, if they wanted to do that anyway. So maybe they could do both. It's really interesting. So we'll see. We'll see what the league decides to do. But that is one of the rules proposals on the docket. I do think it's really interesting what the Detroit Lions proposed in a couple of different aspects, okay? First of all, the penalty of defensive holding and illegal contact not being a free first down and only being a 5-yard penalty. There are unintended consequences, right? The unintended consequences are guy is getting beat 10 yards down the field. He knows he's going to get beat for a touchdown. He just grabs somebody by the jersey. Would have been an easy touchdown. So now you're saying, well, that's only a 5-yard penalty. And if it's not a first down, it's not a first down. If you're the offensive team, you're going to be mad about that. But I do think it's way too penal right now, as it stands, and it always has been, to give a automatic first down on a regular holding or, you know, illegal contact. If it's third down and 10 and it happens 5 yards downfield, it's an automatic first down. Now, I know why. As I just said, you're possibly taking away a really easy catch for a first down. You know what we saw a lot of last year? Defensive line holding calls. Way more than normal, I should say. Like, how many times last year in a game you'd be watching and go, wait a minute, holding on the defensive line? They focused on that last year. In this scenario, right now, that's an automatic first down. That's a defensive lineman holding an offensive lineman. That's an automatic first down. This rule would change that as well. And then, of course, you have the bylaws and the resolutions, and one of those is the Detroit Lions also proposing that the wild card team, if they have a better record than a division champion, would actually be the higher seed when it came to the playoffs. Most of you I've heard from at Sal Sports on social, if you want to do it that way, that's where I've heard a lot of people from, say they don't like this rule because what's the incentive and what's the reward then from winning your division? My counter to that is the reward is you still make the playoffs, even if you're in a really bad division. And you go 9-8, you still make the playoffs. That's the reward. You would still make the playoffs regardless of how bad your division is. In this day and age, you could get an 8-9 division winner. We had one at exactly 500 a few years ago. Let's see if this would happen last year, by the way. Let's see. 14-3 Minnesota Vikings. Yeah, the 14-3 Minnesota Vikings were a wild card. Two different division winners only had 10 wins. The Washington Commanders, how about this? This is really interesting. I didn't even realize this. Last year, the 5, 6, and 7 seeds in the NFC all had better records than the 3 and 4 seeds. All of them. The Green Bay Packers had 11 wins. They were the final wildcard team. They had a better record than two division winners. That is why the Lions are making this proposal, because they were almost in the same situation as the Vikings. Came down to that last game. Vikings lost. They go to 14-3 and have to be the 5 seed and go on the road. And then, of course, they lost. Lots of stuff to discuss here. We'll get with Ben Ostro. He is at Football Zebras. He is the founder of it and does a great job at that website. Lots of good information there, and we're going to talk with him about some of these rules proposals coming next week at the NFL owners meetings. Ben Ostro up next on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Micah High joins me at 11 a.m. Thanks for being with me on a Tuesday. All right, next week, really Sunday it begins, but mostly Monday, Tuesday into Wednesday down in West Palm Beach. It is the annual league meetings, the NFL owners meetings. Lots of stuff's going to be discussed, including, of course, this is where a lot of the rules get taken care of. They're going to be on the schedule for the owners to vote on from the competition committee. Joining us right now on the West Her Hotline, we've talked to him a couple times before, and yes, Josh, you'll have to bring him up. It's Ben Ostro, founder and editor-in-chief at Football Zebras. Ben, good to talk to you again. It's Sal Capaccio here in Buffalo. Thanks for doing this today.
Sure thing. Great to talk to you.
All right, Ben. So we have a few rules that have been proposed, actually fewer than normal, I would say, this year. But let's talk about them a little bit. I think the one that catches everybody's attention is the rules proposal by the Detroit Lions to eliminate the automatic first down for a defensive holding or illegal contact penalty and just go with the 5 yards. How do you digest this? Give us a reason why it is already an automatic first down and why you think teams would want that to be eliminated.
Well, we often hear baseball has the dead ball era, and that's pretty much applies to football from like 1920 to 1940, 45, thereabouts. When they started to open up some of the rules against the offense, and it was at that time that they got a dedicated rules person, somebody from George Halas's orbit, a guy named Shorty Ray, and he was sitting there with a stopwatch and timing between plays and doing all sorts of things to speed up the game and eliminate these 0-0, 3-0, 7-0 scores. And basically his mantra going forward, and they've kept up with this, is you're not going to penalize the offense. It's an offensive game. You're not going to give these advantages to the defense. So I understand where they're coming from, where they feel that it's a little bit too punitive to have an automatic first down. A little weird that they chose just defensive holding and illegal contact. Pretty much anything that occurs after the snap on defense, with the exception of running into the kicker, that's going to be an automatic first down. So, so it kind of cherry-picked a couple of the defensive holding and illegal contact. But again, yeah, it's an offensive game. They will promote rules to promote the offense. And that's probably why that proposal doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, I feel like that's one that's probably going to die on the vine a little bit, right? So it's a little bit too radical. And I agree with you. I don't think that'll wind up going anywhere. We'll see. All right, so Green Bay essentially proposes to eliminate the tush push. But then again, if you read more into it, people say, well, not really, because the way that they're proposing it is to eliminate a player lined up directly behind the snapper and pushing him. So what is the difference here? Can we parse this a little bit?
Well, they're saying that you can't push your body weight against the teammate who lined up behind the snapper and then received the snap. So it's the quarterback. They're trying to describe the quarterback, but not eliminate any other possibilities. But, you know, the way the rule is crafted, immediately at the snap, pusher throws body weight against a teammate, lined up directly behind. I mean, it's like they're describing the tush push exactly.
Right.
And we originally had assisting the runner being push or pull. But it was always officiated that, you know, when you're close to the goal line, for instance, yeah, there's a lot of pushing. It's like, are you pushing the run? Are you pushing the pile? There's like hands and everything like that. They were not expected to officiate that so hard where they would have to get so detailed and to find, you know, oh, okay, that one was pushing the runner when you're in this big scrum at the goal line. Until it became a design play, you know, that was a non-issue. And so eventually it just kind of came out of the rule book. They're like, we can't really officiate this way, and so it was dropped from the rule book, and it's just pulling the runner. And so this
right,
is
so
a way to kind of craft this in specifically to reach into the tush push playbook, but then exclude everything at the goal line. But
right, so
aiding the runner is not called very often anyway, because
right.
The last time, and you'll remember this in Buffalo maybe. The AFC Divisional in 91, the Chiefs pulled Rob Thomas on a short pass, and they that's the last flag that was thrown for aiding the runner some, you know, 35 years ago there. So it was a decline because they didn't get the first down, so the Bills declined it. So there's your little trivia nugget to impress people at the sports bar.
Very cool. All right. So I think that what's confusing for people here about this rule, though, Ben, is it says specifically lined up directly behind the snapper and receives the snap immediately at the snap. Okay, so all right, so what you're saying, that's right, that's the quarterback. I think people are looking at it as someone lined up directly behind the quarterback. That's not what this says. This is specifically referencing the quarterback, and then someone would push him. Now, look, I will tell you, even though the Bills have been very good at it and they're great with Josh Allen at it, I do believe that the pushing forward should fall under the aiding the runner rule. And actually, Sean McDermott, who's on the competition committee, has kind of indicated that he wouldn't mind seeing this rule be put in place to ban this because of safety concerns. The issue is there's really no data, Ben, that shows that there's been a safety concern about this play.
Well, and that's when you would see the competition committee move the needle on that. If we had, God forbid, something happens on one of these. But even if that, you know, if it's a freak occurrence, you know, it's not going to initiate a rule change. But, you know, basically they're saying that, yeah, there's no data to support that that's any more dangerous than any other play. And, again, it comes back to when you get into the competition committee, you know, the teams can toss around whatever proposal they want. When it gets to the competition committee, they're looking at specific things like how are we going to officiate it? What's in, what's out, you know, very specific things. So they're going to look at, they probably looked at every tush-push play for the last 5 years or however long it's been going, and probably some older ones as well, and just went through, is this it? It's, you know, are we going to count this? This is close. It's not, they didn't line up that way. So they take the detailed approach to that, and that's probably why they did not pick up that proposal and run with it.
Ben Ostro joining me here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. He is the founder and editor-in-chief over at Football Zebras. All right, operationally, the overtime rule has been changed a lot. We know it changed after the Bills-Chiefs game in 2021, the epic game that came down to, you know, the overtime and the Chiefs getting one possession. And now another rule going forward is, and this we've seen this before, let's get it to both teams possessing, even in the regular season, to make it more in line with what the playoff rule is. What have you just kind of gathered from how this has gone and what the momentum is, and do you think that they'll eventually do this?
Well, I think the competition committee didn't pick up this one as well because it reverts back to the 15-minute overtime, first of all, or, you know, the maximum 15-minute overtime. They set it back to 10 in 2017, and sort of the reason was that, well, we don't want to have too many snaps when the team's playing a Sunday night, then they go into Thursday or something like that. So, which didn't seem to be that much of a big deal. If you're going to extend past a field goal, and we've seen injuries there where, you know, on those where it wouldn't have ordinarily been sudden death, and, yeah, there's players that have season-ending injuries in that extra time there. So, you know, it does happen, but adding this extra possession after a touchdown, and you're going to be constrained to the 15 minutes, it really kind of puts the damper on getting two full possessions in. If one was a drive for a touchdown as opposed to a field goal, you know, even with a field goal, they can go from 10 down to 2 minutes and really short time on the opponent. So I really don't see them picking that up, especially because it kind of overrides the player safety concern that the competition committee advanced in 2017.
All right, Ben, let's talk about this kickoff stuff, because obviously here we are again. Last year they moved the touchback from the 25 to the 30. Kickoff returns did increase, but they like what they saw, and they want even more. So now it looks like it's going to be discussed. It's not a formal rule proposal right now, but the competition committee will discuss next week moving it from the 30 to the 35. I was at the Combine in Indianapolis, and I will tell you, as you probably know, there seems to be quite a bit of momentum. A lot of people will believe this is going to happen, which is why teams are signing kickoff return specialists, including LaVisca Chenault here in Buffalo a couple of weeks ago. What are the pros and cons and how they're going to work through this as far as the touchback going to the 35-yard line in your mind?
Yeah, and this was pretty much a foregone conclusion while the ink was still wet on the rule last year, that they would be evaluating it, tweaking it, taking a look at, you know, what exactly we are doing, where the formation lines are, what needs to be adjusted. And those are the two big ones, are the kickoff spot and the touchback spot. They originally proposed the 35-yard line for the kickoff in the air to the end zone. It would still be a touchback to the 20. if it lands short and then rolls into the end zone. But they originally had 35, and they made a change just prior to passing to make it a touchback to the 30. So is that same group of coaches that pushed back on it last year, are they going to be vocal enough this year to push back on changing the touchback line? Maybe not. You know, maybe the competition committee is like, hey, you know what? This is what we're doing to save the kickoff. If we're just going to have a perfunctory play here, you know, we're not really going to be doing very much. We might as well just start on the possession on the 20 or do some other modification there. The kickoff spot, that's an interesting thing because then that sort of gets you towards maybe not reaching the landing zone, but these kickers, they can make it. I mean, all the lines are the same for a safety kick from the 20, and they pretty much they can almost make the end zone from the 20. So it's not really going to affect it too much, but yeah, they'll probably change their statistics. And it's basically a numbers thing. They're looking at a percentage that made it to the end zone. How are we going to change it? What do we want to change? How much do we want to change it? Because if it flips completely the other way, that's not exactly what they're looking for. So they're going to be tweaking this. It was proposed as a one year rule change. So they were definitely going to be looking at this at the end of the season. And it'd be interesting to see where they wind up. And I think that there's going to be some minor changes in there.
Ben, let's go back to the AFC Championship game. Josh Allen doesn't get the spot on the fourth down, very controversial. A lot of people have pointed out how the spot takes place, and there's some confusion, and fans don't really know. You have one official coming in from one side, you have one official coming in from the other side. He gives the ball to somebody, he marks it down there when the other official had maybe a more forward spot. Can you explain to our listeners what the process is for spotting the football after a play?
So I'm about to get ratioed, aren't I? So basically, in this particular situation, and we covered it live, that it appeared that to the casual viewer that there were dueling signals from the line judge and the down judge. In actuality, the line judge didn't put up his hand to indicate dead ball, which is a signal to his partner across the field is, I don't have something here. You're going to have to rule on it. It's more towards your side of the field. And so, yeah, at that point, you know, it does get into a pile and you have to make judgment calls. We broke this down on a podcast and we spent 10 minutes just on mm-hmm. this play. So it's like there are a lot, if something's very simple like that, there's a lot of intricacy to it. But when it disappears into a pile, yeah, you have to make a call. Even though you don't see that ball and you wait to make sure that there's no fumble and you process the play and you say, this is my gut feeling as to where that ball is. Even though it's obscured from my view, it is on the other side of that player. All I see is bodies between me, but I can see where his shoulder is and I can see where his helmet is and his body. And so I can make the judgment call that he's holding it at waist level or a little bit above waist level, and his waist did not cross the line. So it's really just kind of a gut check at that point. You've been in this role for however many years. You go all the way down to high school football, all the way on up. You just make that call in real time, and then you look. You know, we have the ability to look at it on replay. And in this particular case, because it disappeared into that pile, there was nothing that was conclusive to overturn it. You know, you have a feeling that it might have been a first down, but that's not enough to do a reversal. And so in the long run, you know, any of these spotting things about using, you know, lasers for the first down or the new Hawkeye measurement that they're going to do, the officials still have to put the ball on the ground and make a spot before there's a measurement by this new Hawkeye system that gets rid of the chains. So, you know, it's still, you need a human to make a human decision in that moment. I mean, otherwise, you know, if we're starting to do this, you know, upstairs, then we might as well just play Madden.
What about chips and balls that we hear from so many fans all the time? Well, if a chip is a ball, the chip will just tell you where the front of the ball was. I mean, how realistic is that?
Sure. Well, there's no chips in knees and chins and elbows and all of that. So, I mean, it could help conceivably, but again, the competition committee is going to look at that and say, what is the return on this? We're going to put the chip in the ball and it might help us. And, you know, that may be part of a future revision to some extent, that there might be some assistability with the chip in the ball. But in the long run, that's going to be such a small subset of plays. It's really going to be, in most cases, you got to make the call. Where's that knee down? Where's the player down? And, you know, where is that ball at that particular time? And to kind of try and make that call in replay, you know, is putting a lot into the replay area. You know, you got to make that call on the field. And, you know, on the flip side of the coin, you got to make that first down the definitive thing. You don't put it in the official's hands. You make that definitive and get that first down.
A couple more for you here, Ben, before we go, and I appreciate your time this morning. Ben Ostro from Football Zebras. I threw it out to my listeners. What rule would you like to see change? And these are the two that most commonly come up. So let's just walk through these before we leave. Number one, touchback. When a ball gets fumbled through the end zone, it's a touchback. And a lot of fans say that's too penal. And we've seen this actually come up in some of the rules proposals. But why has the league said, no, we're going to keep it that way? And you know what I'm talking about. You're at the two-yard line. You fumble the ball. It goes into the end zone, out of bounds. You lose the ball. Whereas some people say, why don't you just keep the ball and put it back at the 20?
Well, I don't remember the outcry that Leon Lett was sort of jobbed on that fumble return at that particular time. So same general situation where, you know, the ball goes out of bounds in the end zone. I mean, I don't, you know, Tom Beebe did recover it, but, you know, it's same general principle where it's, you know, fumbled through the end zone.
Well, it happened real quick. It happened. I think the one it really came out was a couple years ago in the playoffs. The Cleveland Browns were playing the Chiefs. And I think it was Baker Mayfield that this happened to. And the Chiefs lost the ball because of the rule and people said, we need to change this.
Well, it comes down to ball security. And we said that, you know, like I said, that we give the offense most of the deference, mm-hmm. but here's a case where they give the defense something. It's like, okay, yeah. your back's up against the wall. If they cannot hold onto the ball, you know, you've done your job. You have defended that goal. So if it goes out of bounds in the end zone, you know, you have a limited space to work with to make that recovery. If a runner is angling for the pylon and just before they lose that ball, oh, it just went over. I'll get it back at the one. Or maybe, you know, mm-hmm. some people have said, well, they get it back at the 20 or something like that. It's still, you know, the defense made the play. They kept him out of the end zone. And so I think that there has to be more of an emphasis on ball security near that goal line, knowing that rule is in play, and, you know, and which has been that way on all levels and has been that way for more than a century. It's one of those things that's really baked in that the defense has to defend that goal. And in that yeah. particular case, they did do that and did not allow a recovery in their end zone. So in that case, I'm fine with the rule. I know it's a little punitive. It seems a little punitive, but, you know, it's one of those things that the defense has going for them.
All right, last one. Do you ever see a change in the pass interference rule to go to the college rule, which is this is another one we get a lot, which is it should be a spot foul like in college, a 15-yard penalty like in college, not a spot foul. Do you ever see in all of your talk any momentum
maximum
for that?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it would be a 15-yard maximum.
Yes.
And, we've seen occasionally you see these 40, 35-yard penalties for DPI and you know, pass interference is probably one of the most difficult things to officiate. And, it gets right more often, whether it's a call or no call. It gets called correctly more often by a wide margin. And it's those ones that stick out that, you know, that they are missed calls. And those are the ones that seem to drive in any situation. Those are the ones that seem to drive rule change, you know, the upcry of mm-hmm. let's change this rule. Well, it's kind of isolated to these situations. And the rule kind of, it's staying at spot foul for years that they have looked at it. But I think that the overwhelming thought is that, you know, you're going to have a defensive back that's going to say, you know, I'll take the 15 and I'll make it look like it was an accident. I won't make it look intentional, because that's the override, is that, well, if it was an intentional pass interference, then you would get it downfield wherever it happened. You know, these teams are, you know, these players are very skilled at getting away with just enough, and maybe, you know, getting away with a pull here or a tug there. And, you know, so something like that, you know, you're going to see more players that exploit that rule in that situation. And then again, it goes back to not giving the offense that advantage that's kind of baked in.
Ben, thank you so much for this today. Ben Ostro, editor-in-chief, founder as well, Football Zebras. Lots of great stuff at footballzebras.com. Check it out. Check their site. They got a podcast. You guys are doing a great job. Always a great resource. Thanks a lot for helping us out today, as the rules will be voted on next week. Thank you again.
Your thing. We got an exclusive up there today about four officials going back to the UFL. So if everyone wants to check that out, and you know, there's a little more accountability in officiating, and I think people will like to see that.
I like that. You guys also have the assignments every week during the season. It's a great site for a lot of official resources. Thank you very much, Ben.
Thanks. Take care.
Yeah, you got it. That is Ben Ostro. All right, we'll take a timeout. Really late to the break. Got to come right back. We'll go to another break. And then Micah Hyde is going to join me at 11 a.m. here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.